Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
We're talking about rituals today.
So I think
our first question is, what is ritual to you? Do you want to jump into that?
Sure. This is a really interesting topic to me because this is the place where we diverge kind of vehemently from most of the atheists out there. You know, there are a lot of people that don't believe in gods of various kinds, but there's a subsection of us who recognize the value of symbolic, metaphorical, poetic kinds of behavior that help us to focus our intention, kind of reprogram ourselves psychologically, and to celebrate the things in our lives, whether it's the passage of the seasons or a transition in our lives or any of those, something that we would like to see happen that we'd really like to focus our intention around. So to me, ritual is that. It's behavior for symbolic purposes rather than for practical purposes. You know, you don't light the candle because you want light and heat. You light the candle because the candle symbolizes something that with its ignition, you want to feel ignited in yourself.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So how about you? How would you talk about what ritual is? And
yeah, well, I did a lot of brainstorming to try and come up with how to talk about it before we got together. And I came up with a general, supposed definition, and that ritual is a set of actions that you perform to cause some sort of change within yourself. Now, that is so broad that it almost doesn't have meaning to say that. So I was thinking about breaking that down even more. And there's kind of two different things that I think of as being ritual. And one is that ritual of the things that we repeat over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
The ritual of your morning ritual. You get out of bed and you perform, you turn on the coffee machine, probably for most folks. And what do you repeat again and again? And that's a ritual. But then ritual also being something that we do intentionally to affect change within ourselves, whether that's changing our emotional state or the way that we think or relate to things. And that there's we have a lot of influence and power in our lives by consciously using ritual to change the way we are experiencing ourselves and life.
Yes. I think one of the things that enacting regular ritual does for me is it forces me to pay attention. Life can kind of speed by with a lot of routines. And I just find that my life is richer because I'm acknowledging the moment. One of the things about the ritual psychological state is that it's a very present state.
Mm-hmm.
When the limbic system of the brain is activated. And so we're not conjecturing about possible futures or strategizing about how particular actions might lead to different results. Instead, we're very much in the moment in that very meditative state that the Buddhists talk about a lot and pursue, the state of radical presence. And so every action in that moment becomes laden with meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And it I guess the way that I would talk about it is that it goes straight into me and has more of an emotional impact, because that's the part of my brain that is working at the time, than just going through the course of my day, working and driving and all that kind of stuff.
So it sounds like you're talking about a sort of a greater awareness or deeper awareness.
Yes.
Say so? And
yes. And it's an awareness. It's interesting because I talk about being in the limbic system of the brain, which is the mammalian emotional connecting kind of part of the brain. But ritual is sort of a dance between that part of the brain and the thinky part of the brain, the prefrontal neocortex, because the neocortex will sort of download these poetic meanings. Oh, look, there's a spiral. Well, that's a spiral that has been seen in ritual contexts for thousands of years. And then the limbic system says, oh, that feels really good. I feel connected to the history of humanity and to all of this ritual activity that has been conducted by humans for all these millennia. So there's this sort of dance between the idea part of the brain and the feeling experiencing part of the brain.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think maybe we should jump into how we practice rituals in our lives.
Mm-hmm. There are a bunch of different ways that I practice ritual in my life. And I guess I should say that this is I've recorded elsewhere, and maybe sometime I'll tell the story in this podcast, but I grew up as an atheist in a scientific household. And then I became involved with the pagan community when I was in my early 20s, and remained involved in that way for about 25 years until I had a series of really souring experiences with people who were using their belief in gods and magic and other sort of supernatural things as excuses for what I saw as very unethical and inappropriate behavior.
Yeah.
And so I left the pagan community at that time. But within 6 months or so, I started to realize how much I missed the practices and the rituals and maintaining an altar and all those kinds of things. And so when I talk about why I do ritual or how I do it, it goes very much to that question of, well, what was I missing? What is that ephemeral thing that was so enriching to my life that when I left, even for very good reasons, it felt like my life became very barren thereafter.
So when you left, you dropped all of those practices, is that correct?
I did.
So you just said, no more to this, none of this.
Yes. I because I thought of paganism as something that you do not just by yourself, but as part of a community.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I withdrew from a lot of my friends. I certainly withdrew from the Church of All Worlds circle that I had contact with before, because that's where a lot of the problems were. So as I got back, as I sort of wrestled with these questions of what is a religion and what does it do for us and what does that mean about the evolution of the brain and these, and what do I want out of life? These very big questions, right? I started to realize that it was sort of like a set of Russian dolls, the matryoshka, the nesting dolls, because there are rituals that I do by myself, for myself, like my daily ritual in front of my altar, which I call a focus because altar implies worship to me.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are the acknowledgments of the turning of the seasons, which are very important to me. Today, as we record this, is the generally acknowledged midpoint between the winter solstice and the vernal equinox. So this is one of those days when I tend to do something, either in a group or by myself, to acknowledge that the light is returning, spring is coming.
There's rain in your season, right?
Yes, lots and lots of rain in our season. And so the hills have all turned green, and the creeks are all rushing. And it's the time when the earth is really fertile here. The summertime is very dry, and all of the grass goes to seed and turns golden. It's more of a time of survival for nature, rather than the time of growth and blooming and all that that you see in the early spring here. So there's that level. And then there's this other community kind of level where I want to acknowledge moments in the lives of people who matter to me. So whether it's a naming ceremony for a child or a wedding or a coming of age ceremony or a getting older ceremony.
So rites of passage.
Rites of passage. Kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel that our society is really impoverished when it comes to rites of passage.
Mm-hmm.
Those that are Christians have christenings for babies, and other than that, it's basically weddings and that's it. And funerals.
Yeah. Graduation,
yeah.
I suppose, sort of. That's sort of a coming of age.
Right. But that sort of implies that people who don't graduate never become adults.
Yeah.
which is another topic we could discuss. Part of what I hope my practice and work to make visible the option of atheist paganism will do is to give people permission and encouragement that when a significant milestone is passing in their lives, that they can ritually acknowledge that with the people who care about them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know about you, but I was well into my 30s when I finally stopped asking myself, am I a grown-up now? And I think that's a dangerous question, especially for young men.
Mm-hmm.
Because young men will do a lot of dangerous stuff in the name of being like an adult that can hurt themselves and hurt other people.
Yeah.
And young women too. I mean, 15-year-olds who have babies, it's like, you know, okay, I'm a woman now, so I'm going to have a baby and that'll prove it.
Yeah.
And now economically, you're really saddled with a very, very difficult path to walk here in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good for you and it's not good for the baby unless you've got a lot of family support.
Yeah.
So anyway, those are some examples. How about you? How about the kinds of ways that you experience and practice ritual?
Yeah, well, there's the daily rituals, and the purpose of those go back a little bit to why I would want to perform rituals. And for me, that it's about that empowerment of being present in the moment, like you were talking about before. And I think about how my very existence is so astronomically unlikely. And it's actually an understatement even to say that it's astronomically. It's just that I get to be is so special. I get to be this piece of the universe experiencing itself for this relatively short period of time.
Yes.
And I don't mean that in a morbid way that, oh, I'm going to die. And to me, that's exciting. I have this period that I get to exist. And it's really very, very short. It's a blink of the eye. It's not even a blink of the eye.
Yes.
And so thinking about how do I want to experience that? And I want to be joyful. I think that there's value in experiencing all of the different emotions that we get to have. But I like to feel good, to feel joyful, to feel connected. That's where I want to spend my awareness in this opportunity I have to be me. And so ritual is a way to help me do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I've chosen points in my day in which I already have a routine that I go through, like the drinking coffee or whatever morning drink I'm having. I make a point of when I take that first sip to ground. And the grounding is a really important part for ritual for me. It's almost always the first step, or it is the majority of that ritual. And to center myself and be aware in the moment and think about a little bit of my intention for the day. And then I have moments throughout the day that I will return to that. And also I have young children right now. And mm-hmm. I think that routine and ritual, I'm being attacked by a wonderful cat right now.
Mine is clawing at the door, trying to get in.
Like they know when we're recording, they want to be part of the attention. So one of the things that I, as a parent, am doing, I'm trying to help them build that foundation as well. So I try to include them in rituals, and we have some that we share, such as we have a star time and a sun time, in which we make sure for at least 5 minutes. It's much better if it's longer, but at the bare minimum, to go outside for 5 minutes during the day and for 5 minutes at night, and just to breathe in that experience. Or before we go to bed, a sort of gratitude ritual of talking about what are the things we were grateful for today and what do we hope to be grateful for tomorrow. So I have those domestic everyday rituals, which are about how I just experience being me, being part mm-hmm. of life, being part of a family, this very mammalian experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then rituals, which are the more, I suppose, formal rituals, which are honoring the passage of the seasons or the rites of passage, like you were talking about a little bit. And those will often have a little bit more structure to them, then be working with symbols, with smells, with colors. I'm not a very verbal person, so I don't speak poetry or speak things, but I will do a lot of visualizing and holding of objects which mean things to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of the general approach that I have to rituals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I hear a lot of commonality between our approaches to these things. And it occurs to me that, one of the questions that I get asked a lot, it's like, why are you a pagan if you're not going to worship gods? What's the point? And the answer that I always have to that question is because it makes my life richer and more colorful and more beautiful, and I'm able to experience it at a deeper level than if I wasn't following this pagan path. And it also feels like it has an inherent truthfulness to it, to me.
Yeah.
The earth is real. The ecology is real. The seasons and their passage are real.
Yeah.
And failure to acknowledge this because we live inside walls is, I think, kind of a tragic mistake, because that's not what we evolved to do. It's not...
It has a profound impact on our emotional state, but our health as well.
Yes, yes. So that's why I do it. And since returning to, you know, since articulating a framework that made sense to me for how to proceed and returning to ritual practices, I've been much happier. I've just been much happier, and my life feels a lot richer. And even when I was going through a really difficult time up to about a year ago, where I was unemployed for a year and a half and in very, very scary economic circumstances, I still never went into the kind of depression that I had before, because I felt a connectedness to the pattern of everything. I felt like at some fundamental level, I belong here. Mm-hmm. There's a place for me here. And I think that having that feeling was central to my ability to continue to persist during that difficult time, because I knew that there was somewhere where I was going to fit in and be able to work and all that kind of thing. It's a very complicated world, and it's filled with all kinds of interesting nooks and crannies, and there has to be one that fits for just about everyone. If they're able to be connected to themselves and grounded and to feel connected to the rest of the universe, yeah. I think.
Yeah. So can we jump back real quick? You mentioned the experience you'd had where you left all of your pagan practices for about 6 months. And you mentioned that at that time, you thought of paganism as something that you did with other people. When you came back to that, was there a shift in your view, or do you want to touch on that a little bit, about that balance between self and communal practice?
Sure, sure. I had always done individual practices, so it's not that I didn't do those. It was more that I understood being a pagan as being a part of the so-called pagan community. Mm-hmm. And that is almost certainly an artifact of my particular circumstances here, living in the greater San Francisco Bay Area, where there are a lot of pagans. To my understanding, demographically, most pagans in the United States are still solitaries, mm-hmm. or family practitioners. They don't feel connected into a broader community. But as it happened, I came into a community of thousands of people. And so most of my friends and those that I would celebrate the seasons with they came out of those circles. And I guess there was another piece, which was about kind of going along to get along, because I always had. I had always gone to these rituals where these gods were invoked and that kind of thing. And I had always just kind of went, well, you know, it's a metaphor. It's an archetype. I can live with it. And as time went on, I became more and more clear. No, these people really believe this stuff. They literally think they are talking to an invisible being now.
Yeah.
So I guess I just became, I came into the pagan community feeling like I was joining a community. And I didn't really understand that my paganism really sprang from myself fundamentally. It wasn't about joining a society. It was about defining for myself a particular kind of relationship with the world, a conversational relationship with the world. Even though the world isn't listening and it doesn't talk back, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still able to have that conversational relationship where even the random synchronicities that come along feel like gifts, and they feel meaningful, and they feel surprising and like blessings.
Hmm.
So I think that when I returned, and I didn't return really for about 5 years.
Wow.
I left, I realized how bereft I was about 6 months later. But then I spent the next 4.5 years doing research about ritual and the brain and human evolution, and really asking myself all those questions about why does this matter to me? What is a religion? What do people get out of it? Why does every culture in the world have religion?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, that's as mysterious as a question as why do we have dancing or why do we have music? Or, you know, there are these things that humans do that are just really remarkable, and they're universal.
Mm-hmm.
So we know they must be rooted in ourselves genetically. They're not just cultural artifacts.
Yeah.
So the end result of that was that after that 5 years, I had written my essay, How I Became an Atheopagan. And that eventually grew into my book, and it turned into the website and the Facebook group, and other people started noticing, and you could have knocked me over, but they wanted some too. So that's exciting.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful. So this wasn't on the questions that we talked about before starting to record, but are you comfortable sharing with what a ritual for you looks like?
Sure. Sure. I did a lot when I was working on my essay. I did a lot of sort of tearing apart of what rituals are. I looked at rituals all around the world, and including in modern paganism, but in a lot of other ways as well. And I started noticing structural tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I named those and eventually kind of laid out this 5-part structure for a ritual, which is not the only one that works, is not better than any other. My only claim for it is that it will work. It will get you into the ritual mindset, and it will take you through an experience. So the first phase of that is what I call arrival. And arrival has to do with a declaration that we are now entering a ritual space.
Mm-hmm.
And that can include grounding. It can include a land acknowledgement of the people who were supplanted and pushed aside in order for me to be on this land at this time. It can include a declaration of sacred space. We are now in a container of safety and protection where we can speak our truth and we can go through this experience together. In my book and downloadable from the Atheopaganism website, there is the content of an Atheopagan ritual primer.
Mm-hmm.
That if people are curious about all this, they can go and they can download it and read it, or even better, they can buy my book.
But it is all available for free.
It is all available for free at the website. Absolutely. And that's a choice that I've made. I feel pretty strongly that I want this material to be available for folks, whether they want to buy a book or not.
Yeah.
So the arrival phase is the first. And then the second is gratitudes and, qualities and intentions. Now, in many cases, a ritual's intention has already been predefined. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of optional. But after having arrived and being in that grounded, open, safe space, you can make a declaration of, here's what we're doing. This is what this is about. We are here today to, you know, take young Robert and transform him from a boy into a man.
Yeah. You
know, those kinds of things.
Sounds like that might be particularly useful if it is a group ritual.
Yes, very much so. And then the second element of that is what I call the invocation of qualities. And this is sort of like invoking gods or elements or stuff like that, or it bears resemblance to that. Mm-hmm. But it's more about, what are the powers and attributes that we would like to be with us in this ritual as we go forward? You know, do we want courage? Do we want sensitivity? Do we want empathy? Do we want power? Mm-hmm. And typically what I do in a ritual that I design is I do that where people can just shout out the things that they want to invoke into the circle. Mm-hmm. And then the whole group repeats whatever was said. So it is dispersed amongst all of the people that are participating. But I do this individually. I invoke the power of kindness into my working today, because I feel that will need to be with me to do this work. So that's the invocation of qualities, and there are many different ways to do it. And then comes the most difficult to define aspect of the ritual, which is what I call deep play, mm-hmm. or the working. And it's hard to define, because once you're in the ritual state, everything becomes freighted with meaning. And so the deep play can be everything. It can be knotting ribbons together. It can be holding hands and dancing. It can be singing a chant or a song. But all of it is about reinforcing the intended outcome of the ritual through symbolic means. Mm-hmm. And I write a lot in the ritual primer about different possibilities of how that can go, but it's the most ineffable of the elements of the ritual structure that I present, because it's really about what feels true to the participants in the moment. It's about symbolic enactment. So following the deep play or working aspect of the ritual comes gratitude. And some cultures do this, some cultures do not, but for me personally, this works really well. It's an expression of gratitude for what has been changed, mm-hmm. by the deep play, of gratitude for the various qualities that were invoked, and for the many blessings that we enjoy simply by being alive here on planet Earth. Hmm. And to me, there's sort of an accelerant effect of sowing gratitude into your rituals, because even yeah. if you're struggling with something very difficult, it puts it all in a framework of understanding that there's a lot of good going on. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's just a very helpful lens for people to look at the world through. I think it helps us be healthier and happier.
That certainly reflects my experience of the world as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for those of us who are ritual practitioners, gratitude becomes something really essential. Mm-hmm. And it's not a surprise that many traditions like Buddhism, for example, incorporate a lot of gratitude into their rituals and their philosophy. So then finally, the last aspect after gratitude is what I call benediction. Mm-hmm. And benediction is about dissolving that container of that moment of special liminal space and projecting it into the world. Benediction literally means the giving of a good word. Mm-hmm. And so in many cases, what I do as the leader of a ritual will be, in essence, to say, go forth and be alive and be happy and know that this change has happened. Mm-hmm. It's the integration of the ritual experience into the ordinary world and the declaration that the ritual is over. So that's how I do it. It's intentionally very generic so that people can adapt it however they like, if they choose to do that. How about you?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of commonality. So I've certainly done rituals with other people in which there has been a very formal structure of, you know, casting the circle and all of that. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the general flow, what you described is very similar to what I usually do on a very intuitive level. Mm-hmm. That creation of the space and the invitation, and then the main work within that, or the play, as you were calling it, and then the opening of that space again, and the invitation for that, for whatever play or work was done, the invitation to continue that and bring it out into the normal awareness that we have. Mm-hmm. Is for me often that being in ritual is a different state.
Yes.
And the container around all of that is to create that state. There are many different ways to create that. So some people, they use phrases and expressions or particular movements to step into that. For me, it begins with acknowledging that I am going to create this space. Mm-hmm. And then going through a grounding. And then from there, beginning it. And because it is a practice and something that I do over and over, doing it the same way or in the same manner allows me to slip more quickly and perhaps more deeply into that state. Mm-hmm. And then the return out. Mm-hmm. And so right now I don't do a lot of formal ritual with groups. That was something that I did in my kind of late teen, early 20s years. That was really important. But now it's at this phase in my life is definitely more of a solitary or family practice. Mm-hmm. I suspect as my children get older, we will probably expand a little bit beyond just the intimate family to the community, probably facilitate that. I could see us facilitating, mm-hmm, some of those rituals. So.
Yeah, that sounds very familiar to me. And there are, of course, all kinds of what we call ritual technologies that can help us to get into that ritual state. Mm-hmm. We know that low lighting conditions, especially flickering lighting conditions like a candle flame or a fire, tends
Something
to turn
very
off
primal.
Very primal, and it tends to turn off the thinky brain and bring us more into that very present and more emotionally open state. Incenses and
drums,
oils,
beats or
drum beats, any of that stuff, very, very trance inducing. A common term for that ritual state is trance. Mm-hmm. And so the invocation of trance becomes a part of the art of doing ritual. All kinds of stuff, low light conditions, colorful stained glass, bells. The Catholics are super good at this.
Yes.
By the way, they are super good at it. I mean, they've had 2,000 years to practice, so they've really figured it out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the architecture.
They had a lot of cultures to draw from as
yes,
well.
Yes, exactly. That's certainly true. Anything that they found, they took. Mm-hmm. So anything that they thought would be of use. Everything from the architecture that causes your eyes to cast way up and so that you feel small. Mm-hmm.
And that being lifted up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Especially those old Gothic cathedrals are just marvels of ritual technology.
And water is another one. Yes. I personally use a lot. I use baths or showers that can be very helpful,
yes,
depending on what the ritual is.
You know, it's an interesting thing about showering, particularly because people don't really need to shower nearly as often as they do in our culture.
In fact, it might not be very good for us.
Be very good for their skin.
Yeah. It's
true. I believe that people do showering as a ritual to change their consciousness a lot.
Yeah. I certainly use it that way on a very conscious level.
Yes. Yeah, I do as well. I mean, if I feel metaphorically coated in yuck, my go-to technology is a shower. Even if it's just yuck because of an interaction with someone or something like that. It doesn't have anything to do with physical grime.
I do that with the children as well.
They
into the bath or the shower, or we'll do a little basin with warm water and a washcloth.
That's
actually a very common parenting technique.
Hmm.
If you don't know why, if things aren't quite working out, if everyone's irritable, either put them in the sun or put them in the water.
Interesting.
And
both of those are good, healthy things.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I am really so interested to hear about your continuing adventures in atheopagan or non-theist pagan parenting. I don't have children myself, and my experiences of parenting were pretty awful because I'm the oldest of seven, and bad things happened when I was 12 and 13, and I ended up having to take care of my siblings. But that was long before I had any sense of pretty much anything, certainly of any sort of ritual practices.
Yeah.
So I'm very interested in what you're discovering as your kids get older.
Yeah, well, it's been a joy so far. Oh, okay. And our last question, I think we've been really talking about it a lot, but maybe if we want to address it directly, what does ritual mean in your life?
Yeah, I think I have been talking about that. Ritual means I'm not disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
It means I'm paying attention. It means I'm not just letting my life slide by unacknowledged. And as you say, we have so little time. I just turned 58, and I can't believe it. I can't believe how quickly all that time went.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how much I have left, as none of us do. So I want to make sure that I experience it as deeply as I possibly can. As you say, it's utterly improbable that we are here as the individuals that we are. Mm-hmm. And I want to take the full ride.
Yeah. Well, I think that might be a perfect place to wrap this up. Before we do, though, would you like to give the plug for our organization that we're supporting right now?
Certainly. I would be happy to. As I explained in our last episode, the Atheopaganism Facebook group does a vote every year to choose a charity that we want to support as a community. And all of the proceeds from our Zazzle store with various things with the Atheopagan sun tree emblazoned on them can be bought. All of the proceeds from that store go to that charity. And I make other contributions around the course of the year. And I hope that other members of the community do as well. Mm-hmm. The group that we chose for 2020 is Indigenous Climate Action, which is an Indigenous people's organization operating out of Canada, mostly addressing the severe issues of the impacts of climate change on Indigenous people in the Arctic and in the far north. And so this is a good combination for us of supporting and encouraging Indigenous people and Indigenous cultures, as well as activism around climate change, which is so important at this time. Mm-hmm. So it's Indigenous Climate Action. Their website is indigenousclimateaction.com. And go there and donate. You'll make the world a better place. Well, Arwen, it's a pleasure talking with you as always, and I look forward to our next conversation.
You too, Mark.